It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In 1977, the late Wisconsin Senator William Proxmire was the driving force in the creation of the Community Reinvestment Act. This law aimed to end redlining and discriminatory lending practices, and it still requires banks to invest in the communities they serve.
Better known as the CRA, it is still being debated and revised today. Advocates for the law argue it benefits cities across the country, like Milwaukee, but that it needs updates for the internet banking age.
Josh Silver worked for the National Community Reinvestment Coalition for more than 30 years. His new book is called Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. Josh, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
We're going to dig into it in a lot more detail, but can you give us a quick sense of the intent of the Community Reinvestment Act? What is it supposed to do, and what's its mechanism to do it?
Well, for decades, communities of color and working class communities were discriminated against, and this is the area of lending. So banks would discriminate against these neighborhoods, and they would not make loans in these neighborhoods. And I will describe redlining in more detail, but literally red lines were drawn around neighborhoods. And if you can't get home loans or small business loans, your neighborhoods will not thrive. They will become economically distressed. So actually in Wisconsin, your great late Senator William Proxmire saw that this was devastating neighborhoods. And he worked with advocates across the country to pass the Community Reinvestment Act in 1977, which requires banks to serve all communities, including low and moderate income communities, consistent with safety and soundness. You know, I'm quoting the statute. And the way this is implemented is federal bank agencies, there's three of them, conduct exams and literally grade banks. And anybody from the general public can go to the internet and look at a bank exam and see how banks are lending in Wisconsin to communities of color, low and moderate income communities. And this provides an accountability mechanism and has increased lending in traditionally underserved and formerly redlined communities.
I want to dig more into the Wisconsin origins. You mentioned the late Senator William Proxmire, and he was working with community leaders, community groups, and inspired, I think, partly by what was going on in Milwaukee when it came to lending and housing. Could you talk a little more about the path from there, seeing this problem, to passing this law?
Sure. So there were advocates across the country, including in Wisconsin, but also in other parts of the Midwest. The mother of CRA, she's called the mother of CRA, is a woman named Gail Sincotta. And she had an advocacy organization that witnessed neighborhoods being blockbusted. Real estate agents would come in and say, you know, the African Americans are coming. You need to sell your house now. So these unscrupulous real estate agents would scoop up the houses at bargain prices and sell them at a markup to African Americans. And the lending was also predatory. So Gail Sincotta and her, it was called National People's Action, thought if you could just get banks to reinvest and end redlining and get banks to make conventional responsible loans, this would stabilize neighborhoods. It would integrate neighborhoods. She was working class white ethnic. Let's integrate neighborhoods and have working class whites living next to African Americans. So she worked with Senator William Proxmire to develop CRA and to get it through Congress. And it required the legislative genius of William Proxmire because it got through Congress by the thinnest of margins.
When people hear, people of color, black people in particular, face discrimination in the housing market, they may have a vague sense of what that means. At a practical level, we had decades, right, where the federal government said, hey, you effectively can't get a loan for a building that's in what's a primarily black neighborhood. And if you wanted to move out of that neighborhood and you were black, in many cases, you couldn't. What did that discrimination mean for on a practical level for a black person who wanted to own a house and build that equity over the years that many white people were able to enjoy and benefit from?
if people want to see what the redlining maps look like, you can go to the University of Richmond website, type in your Google search, University of Richmond redlining maps. And these maps were developed by the federal government, believe it or not, in the 1930s. And there was an incredible amount of racist assumptions here that neighborhoods that were predominantly African American or recent European, Eastern European immigrants and Jews, they would classify these neighborhoods as highly risky. So over the decades, banks avoided these neighborhoods. You combined redlining and lending discrimination with other forms of discrimination and segregation. There are racial covenants in houses saying that if you were a white homeowner in a white neighborhood, you could not sell to an African American or a Jew. And then you fast forward, there are other practices in the real estate industry where realtors would steer black borrowers to black neighborhoods, white borrowers to white neighborhoods. And then you fast forward even later, the subprime lending crisis, predatory lenders. There was still a dearth of bank lending in a lot of African-American neighborhoods. Predatory lenders took up the slack. And you know the subprime lending crisis that resulted in the Great Recession around 2008. So you have decades of this. And people of color had fewer choices, a lot fewer choices in neighborhoods where they could live. And this was a great contributor to the wealth disparity, the disparities of home ownership across the country, and also health disparities, dramatic differences in life expectancy due to discrimination across a lot of areas of life.
Now, since the book came out, you wrote a piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with an example, a real world example of how the Community Reinvestment Act works. You look at the Metro Milwaukee Fair Housing Council and UMB Financial Corporation. What was their agreement? How does it relate to this, the CRA?
Thank you for mentioning the opinion piece. The opinion piece actually shows an example of a redlining map in action that victimized a Haymarket neighborhood in Milwaukee, where you see dramatic differences in life chances and poverty levels, Haymarket neighborhood compared to the neighborhoods that were not redlined. So what CRA does, because there is a public rating, and when banks merge, the federal agencies are required to consider the CRA record. This encouraged banks to reach out to communities. Banks are required in merger applications to demonstrate a public benefit. How is this merger going to benefit the public? So what some banks do is, oh, we're going to make an agreement, and we call them community benefits agreements, with community organizations. And the Metro Milwaukee Fair Housing Council was one of several organizations that struck an agreement with the UMB. After their merger, UMB pledged to make $5 billion in loans and investments over a five-year time period. A lot of it was actually small business and community development related, a little less on the home lending front. But this is a win-win. It is more loans after the merger than before. Banks find profitable lending opportunities, as the research has demonstrated over several years, and neighborhoods get a chance to revitalize and build wealth.
And you mentioned the subprime mortgage crisis that helped kick off the Great Recession. And you talk about in the book, some critics of the Community Reinvestment Act say, aha, the federal government is forcing banks into these communities to make unsafe, unsound loans. You disagree with that. A lot of the loans in question were not under, as I understand it, under the Community Reinvestment Act. Sort that out.
You know, you will have conservative critics saying, oh, you know, CRA is forcing banks to make unsafe and unsound loans. They haven't read the statute. The CRA statute requires banks to make loans consistent with safety and soundness. And what the problem was leading up to the Great Recession is CRA covers banks. CRA does not cover independent mortgage companies that are not required by federal law to make loans consistent with safety and soundness. So independent mortgage companies were making the risky loans with loan terms and conditions that the borrowers could not afford, and selling the loans on Wall Street. And Wall Street, you know, the investment banks are not covered by CRA. So the problem was uneven coverage and a lack of CRA or a law like CRA for independent mortgage companies and Wall Street firms. And there is research done by Federal Reserve economists and other academics that, in my mind, conclusively demonstrate that it wasn't CRA loans by banks. Those loans were responsible, were not ending up in foreclosure. It was the loans made by independent mortgage companies that were that led to the foreclosure crisis.
We're talking about the Community Reinvestment Act, established in 1977. It was made in response to lending discrimination. Josh Silver is with us. His new book is called Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. Let's get to the reform part of that subtitle there. You think the CRA has been a good thing, not perfect, but a benefit. But you see the need for change, especially as banking has evolved over the years. What kind of changes have you do you see a need for?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think CRA should be broadly applied throughout the financial industry. You were just talking about independent mortgage companies. They should have CRA. And some states like Massachusetts actually do cover independent mortgage companies with a CRA-like law. So the CRA that we live with now was basically made in 1995. The regulation in 1995 describes how CRA exams will assess banks' lending and investment performance. So we're now in 2025. And there was a need to make some of the performance measures more objective, like percent of loans to low and moderate income borrowers. How do you know what's outstanding, that's the highest grade? And what do you know? How do you know what is failing? You have to do a better job comparing banks to each other and the demographics in the community. So in 2023, under the Biden administration, the agencies undertook a multi-year effort to make the performance measures more objective and also to update the community reinvestment exams. In 1995, the internet barely existed. And now there is a good amount of lending done through the internet. Bank branches are still very important, but there'll be more and more lending done through the internet and outside of branch networks. And the 2023 regulatory update to CRA took that into account and examined banks in geographic areas where they were making lots of loans but did not have branches. Well, fast forward, elections have consequences, and the Trump administration has announced its intention to repeal the Biden CRA regulation. So we're going to go back to 1995. And what I know for sure is banks themselves go crazy about, oh, is this loan going to count on my CRA exam because it's made outside of my branch network? Well, I want the banks to work with community advocates to, at a future time, to update CRA and to get rid of a lot of these inefficiencies that drive a lot of us crazy.
The way I think of the community reinvestment maybe matches up with an older model of bank ownership, where the bank is in that city and maybe they only make loans in this part of the city but not these other parts, and that's what the CRA is trying to fix. How would you want to see this dealt with if I'm an internet bank? Where's Milwaukee? I can't even find it on a map. How is that organization supposed to work with a local community group when it has really no footprint in that community except for some internet lending?
Most banks are a hybrid. They'll have some branches. They'll do some lending through the internet. But even a lot of mortgage companies today are becoming more and more internet-based. But they still establish relationships in the community. They have a relationship with brokers. If you ever worked with a mortgage broker, you know, they'll refer you to a mortgage company you never heard of, and you will never go into their office. So even today, your internet-based lenders establish relationships with stakeholders in the community, whether it's mortgage brokers, for example. So they should be able to find mortgage brokers that are oriented to serving neighborhoods like Haymarket that were previously redlined, and also work with the Metropolitan Milwaukee Fair Housing Council. Even though you're an internet-based lender, you can still offer a grant to the Metro Milwaukee Fair Housing Center. Maybe you have staff that are not too far away that can come and do a joint counseling session, or, you know, do a virtual one. So I think there are ways, and there are ways today that an internet-based lender can make sure that, say, operations in Wisconsin or Milwaukee can serve traditionally underserved populations by partnering with stakeholders that do this.
This is a federal law we're talking about. Do states, can states go above and beyond the Community Reinvestment Act?
Sure. As I mentioned, Massachusetts earlier, Connecticut, New York. Massachusetts has applied CRA to mortgage companies and credit unions. And so Illinois is more recent, but just has done that as well. There's a bill in New York State considering a CRA-like obligation for insurance companies. There was an issue of redlining for homeowners insurance as well. Show us the data. Do an exam. How many of your policyholders are low and moderate income or live in low and moderate income neighborhoods? California is considering a bill. So this is going on a state level, and hopefully these bills will percolate back up to the federal level. Matter of fact, that's what happened when women got the right to vote around 1920. There was state laws passed allowing women to vote, and it just reached a crescendo where the feds felt that they had to act. And I hope eventually that's what happens with CRA.
Looking to the future, you write that you don't think that the Community Reinvestment Act could be repealed. You don't see the votes in Congress there. Do you have concerns, though, with the Trump administration in particular, which has not been friendly to programs that seem to want to address past racial inequities, that a presidential administration could water it down heavily?
Well, we're seeing that already with the regulation. A law is implemented through the regulation, and the CRA regulation describes how CRA exams are to occur. So it is happening already. But there are cycles in our country, and I think in future years, regardless whether it's Republican or Democrat, I hope a future administration is more friendly to CRA. We are creating a very impressive constituency for CRA. There are thousands of banks in this country. There are thousands of nonprofit organizations in this country. And every day, they are working in partnership to do home lending, small business lending, community development, like healthcare centers and childcare centers. And they are documenting their CRA success stories. And in the past, when there has been congressional hearings, you'll see banks testifying that CRA is an important, valuable law that has helped them serve previously overlooked communities and has led them to profitable lending and banking opportunities. So I think that this institution building, this constituent building, we need to keep at it. We need to keep making it stronger. There will be times when CRA is strengthened, times when it is weakened. But overall, I don't think there are the votes in Congress to repeal it, because it makes capitalism work better in all communities. People who are willing to work hard and play by the rules, they should get a home loan or a small business loan, regardless of the color of the skin. And there's a lot of people in the banking industry that understand why this is important for their bottom lines. So I think CRA is going to survive. And a lot of us hope it's strengthened and it thrives and it really helps economic prosperity in the long term.
Josh, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate talking to you.
Josh Silver is the author of Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. The book examines the law that intended to eradicate redlining. It was introduced by the late Wisconsin Senator William Proxmire in 1977.